On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, I have made it to Philadelphia for the All-Star festivities. Jake Mintz will join me soon. But first, we got to talk about Justin Verlander, who was added as a legend pick to the All-Star game rosters and also announced his retirement at the end of the season. We talk about Verlander's incredible career before previewing the MLB draft, which begins on Saturday. Biggest questions going into draft day, update the home run derby field, and give you the good, the bad, the ugly, because it is Friday indeed. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world capable of retiring with 300 wins. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. We're going to do what Justin Verlander can't.
He tried his damnedest, but unless something really weird happens over the next few months, he is going to fall short of that 300 number. We are going to talk about Justin Verlander on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast and some other stuff as well.
The key is about finding the little wins. You know, there are wins to be found every day. And if you stack those wins together, you can get to 300. So the way Justin Verlander's got to think about it is like, I woke up and I was kind to people today. That's a win. 300 approaches. It's a mindset
thing. I don't think that's how Baseball Reference is going to count it. But if that would make Justin Verlander feel better, then all power to him. Jake Mintz, I am in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where I flew in early this morning after a couple of canceled flights last night. But I am here a little over 24 hours before the start of the 2026 MLB draft, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And of course, it is Friday. We'll give you the good, the bad, the ugly. But let's start with old man JV, who will be part of the All-Star festivities next week here in Philadelphia. Let's talk about it.
With flecks of gray in his beard and the signs of decades of baseball plastered on his face, Justin Verlander climbed the dais in Detroit this week to let the world know that he was calling it a career. Not right now, but at the end of the season. Justin Verlander, future Hall of Famer, one of the greatest pitchers of the 21st century, is now 42 years old. That is older than every other baseball player right now. Excuse me, he's 43. Wow, he is 43. 43 and 140 days old. He was born on February 20th, 1983. He has been around a minute and a half, but that clock is slowly ticking as Verlander will hang him up at the end of the season. The timing of this is related to his inclusion at the upcoming All-Star festivities, where Verlander will be honored as a legend pick. Now, he has thrown just once this season. He's been dealing with a multitude of lower body injuries, hip and hamstring, so he will not throw in the All-Star game. But he will be trotted out there to wave and receive applause from a Philadelphia crowd that that knows who he is.
Yeah, in terms of venue, it is at least a little bit strange. But, I mean, this is a household name that baseball fans will absolutely respect in every regard and cheer for. The sequencing of this announcement was a little bit strange because, if I'm not mistaken, we got the legend pick announcement before he put out a statement and held a press conference saying that he was retiring. I feel like it would have gone in the other order. That would have made a lot more sense. But obviously, it was related and it was connected. And I think it's a good job by MLB and a good way to do this. This is certainly someone that deserves a send-off like this because of what he's meant. And it has been a really strange end to his career. I mean, we can talk about the peak and the legacy. And it feels a little bit weird now because he is going to keep trying to pitch. So we are probably going to have at least one more Justin Verlander conversation on this podcast by the end of the season. But man, it's just been a really strange last few years for him. I remember I was at, what was his last start or one of his last starts of the 2024 regular season with Houston, where he'd been really struggling. He had like an ERA over 5, but in Cleveland, he finished strong. But it was also clear that the Astros weren't really going to want to use him in the postseason. And so he kind of realized that as well. And so then that was the end of that second Houston tenure. And then he signs with the Giants and makes 29 starts, right? Like last year was very average and unremarkable. He only recorded 4 wins, which is related to the chase for 300, which we can circle back to. But he made 29 starts as a 42-year-old. It was an incredible season when you consider the context. He had a 3.85 ERA. He wasn't special, but he was a totally dependable pitcher to the point where coming into this year, it was like, yeah, I guess if he wants to keep doing this, he can. And it seems that this year the age has finally caught up to him and his body's starting to break down. So we'll see how much he contributes to the season. But that said, I mean, this is still a guy that came back from Tommy John at 39 and won another Cy Young. So it's one of the most amazing pitching careers we've ever seen, certainly since we've been doing this. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad he'll get his salute because it is really an amazing career.
Second overall pick in 2004. 2000. And four out of Old Dominion University, the pride of Goochland. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just thinking, right? We'll do some draft chatter here. There are a couple kids in this draft born in 2009, which was Justin Verlander's second All-Star game, his fifth major league season. He had already racked up, you know, plenty of accolades and strikeouts and wins by that point. So yeah, this dude's been chucking it for a while.
So he wins the Rookie of the Year 2006 and is like good in 7, mediocre in 8. But then from 9 to 13 is like peak 1, right? That is Verlander at his absolute most dominant best. Where, dude, he throws 251 innings in 2011. Wins the Cy Young. That year, wins the MVP that year. Justin Verlander is one of the few pitchers with an MVP award in his trophy case. Then he starts to see some age-related decline. 31, 32, it's not great. Turns back the clock in 2017, gets traded to the Astros halfway through that season as a 34-year-old, and the second act is just almost as good as the first. Wins 2 Cy Youngs in Houston in 2019, gets hurt, gets TJ, comes back from it, wins another one in 2022, at which point the career starts to kind of trickle off, is on the Mets for 10 minutes, which people forget, which was so weird to think about now. Back to Houston, San Francisco, and then home in Detroit, one of the greatest pitchers of a generation, All-Star. This will be his 10th one, 3 Cy Youngs, pitching triple crown, rookie of the year, MVP, ALCS MVP, has 2 rings, both of which he won with the Astros in 2017 and then again in 2022. I have a vivid memory of him starting game 5 of the 2022 World Series in Philadelphia, and I went to watch him throw his bullpen at Citizens Bank Park and kind of take in the atmosphere of these rabid Phillies fans berating a 39-year-old who at that point in his career was about as unberatable, unflappable, indomitable as a player can be, because he had this very rare combination of being elite and being 39, where Justin Verlander, of anybody in the baseball universe, is not going to be perturbed by Phillies fans yelling at him because he has accomplished and he is still going to accomplish. And just watching him, you know, exist in that environment is something that I will remember for a long time. Just the ease with which he moved through that situation, how he looked totally unbothered. I haven't really gotten the chance to like talk to Verlander all that much. I haven't really, you know, interviewed him, spent too much time around him. Seems like a very shrewd operator and someone that obviously made the most of his abilities to piece together what will be a Cooperstown career.
Yeah. I've never done anything one-on-one with him, but having watched him pitch in person and done a couple post games with him, especially later in his career, I mean, he is definitely thoughtful about the craft, which is no surprise, but especially when you consider the physical, you know, challenges that he's faced, certainly over the last few years, you could tell he's kind of always trying to strike that balance of, do I still have something to give versus it's time. And it's in his statement, he basically was like, yeah, the game's telling me it's time to go.
He had
be
a
dad.
Really interesting quote.
Yeah.
Where he said, I feel like I'm plugging holes in a boat. Just looking at time, the game, how the game is played now, things I have left to accomplish. I think the writing was on the wall. And mm-hmm. he's been very public about his desire to get to 300 wins. 300 wins for a long time in our sport was seen as the golden standard for a Hall of Fame pitcher. That if you got to 300 wins, you were headed to Cooperstown. And because of how the game has shifted, where pitcher wins, starter wins are one, not really that important anymore, and two, harder to come by because pitchers are leaving games earlier than they ever have. Verlander was honest the other day about how that shift almost made it easier for him to let go of this dream he had of getting to 300 wins because it was so out of his control. Like, even if he was the best version of himself still, you could see a world where he's only getting to 8 pitcher wins, to 9 pitcher wins, right? Because that's just how the game functions at this point. And I thought that that was a very kind of interesting way for him to reckon with the idea that this goal that he had set for himself for so long was going to be unreachable. The idea that it wasn't unreachable by him, it was unreachable by anybody. And I think now we can firmly say we'll never see a 300 win pitcher again, unless the sport fundamentally changes.
Or if, you know, Aaron Ashby,
keeps cooking.
he's racking them up. Yes, I agree with you. And now, of course, it's not like he needed 300 wins to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I think that it was still a point of pride that pitchers were still chasing, even if they didn't necessarily need to get to that number, because that was one that would put him in elite company, certainly in, you know, modern pitching history. I think the last thing I'll say about Verlander, and I mentioned this at the start of the conversation, I am just curious how this actually ends. I know he is not back from the injured list yet. The Tigers, he's now also an interesting part of this Tigers season, because it's hard for me to imagine him pitching well. And like, let's say they rally and they sneak into the postseason, whatever. Is he going to be pitching well enough to be on the playoff roster? I don't know. If he does, that's amazing. Now we're, you know, having conversations the same way as we were doing about Kershaw and Scherzer, who I want to talk about here briefly. But yeah, I think that's the last thing about this, which is it's nice that we know that it's the end. You know, sometimes when guys announce it after the season's over, it almost feels like you missed out on opportunities to really appreciate the ending of this. But I am just super curious how the rest of this goes. I mean, it's quite possible that his body just continues to deny him from contributing whatsoever. That would not surprise me either. But based on what he said, he's at least going to try.
We're at a point now where if he's getting a postseason start, something went seriously wrong. Also, something went seriously right.
Yeah, exactly.
And then seriously wrong. Considering there is Skubal, Fromber, Jack Flaherty, Casey Mize, and then the Troy Melton and the rehabbing Jackson Job, who is working his way back. And so for Verlander to get a start, I would be surprised. To me, he is, until he proves otherwise, and maybe this is not fair, he's more of a totem than anything else. He's like a symbol for the team more than an actual contributor. In the way that I thought Neymar was for Brazil in the World Cup before they threw his husk onto the pitch in a knockout game. I can see a scenario where like Verlander is sopping up garbage time innings in playoff games. He's like the last guy on the roster. He's like Brent Honeywell circa 2024 Dodgers, which is the weirdest role for him to have. But is there are worse people to have that role? And I imagine, like, would he want to do it? Who can say? That's all good problems if we're talking about the Tigers in the postseason, even though they are just 3.5 back as we sit here today. Let's pivot now to Max Scherzer, who wins the standoff, the unspoken, understood showdown between he and Justin Verlander. Scherzer and Verlander, who were teammates together in Detroit for a number of years, who don't like one another. Like, I don't, they certainly are not best friends. I don't think that they're vacationing together. There is something of a professional rivalry that I think has at times become personal. These are big dogs who don't like backing down. And I do think that there is an element, especially for Scherzer, that was like, I don't want to retire before Verlander. I want to outlast him. Is that winning, Jordan? Or is Verlander winning by accepting his fate? Is peace victory?
I do. I think it's fair to say they have certainly had a strange relationship. Side note on that. Also teammates with the New York Mets, which was bizarre.
Who could forget? Who could forget? Me.
And who could forget to that point? That was the last Verlander thing I wanted to say, and then we'll wrap on Scherzer. In 15, 20 years, what will be forgotten more, the Mets' tenure or the Giants' tenure? What do you think?
The Mets' tenure. Ooh. The Mets' tenure is just short.
The Mets' tenure was obviously so short, but like he signed a gigantic contract.
he was good in 2022. Like he'd kind of dominated.
You mean 23? Yeah, when he with the Mets. Yeah, in 23 he was good with the Mets, and then he got traded because the Mets were the Mets. So
no, I'm talking about 2022, dude. Oh wait, no, I'm sorry.
Pause. Yeah, duh.
I'm on Max Scherzer's page now. I was like, wow, Max Scherzer, just Verlander spent 2 years with the Mets? This is wrong. I'm an idiot, and I sincerely apologize. That is why I was like, is Verlander on the Blue Jays now? What's going on? The other thing about Scherzer that's important to point out is like he is in a very similar situation to Verlander.
Right.
Now,
that's what I'm
saying. Their bodies are betraying them. They are 41. Pitchers do not do this. It just doesn't happen. And I think it is interesting and tells us something about Verlander and Scherzer that one of them is ready to go and the other one is not quite there yet.
Yeah, and even more so than Verlander, although miraculously he's managed to like rally at the right times to be able to pitch in these gigantic postseason games.
Game but, like, 7 the of number, the World Series.
Right.
Last but, like, year.
The number of non... I mean, Max Scherzer, I've said this on the show before, because it always makes me laugh. I mean, this sounds a little messed up to say it this way. I mean, he has injured basically everything that is not his elbow. I mean, he's had this thumb issues and the back issues and the hamstring and the groin and the, you know, some a little bit of shoulder trouble. And right now he's dealing with back spasms. And so, right, like if Scherzer comes to this same conclusion this season, and you know where the Jays are and where he fits on them is its own interesting conversation. Right. Does he still feel like he won if they both retire this year? Which brings us back to the whole reason we're having this conversation. Is Max going to try to hang on to get this send off at the All-Star game next year?
Yes. Yes.
I think so. I think so.
Yes.
Because it's too late to do both. It's too late to do both this year. Right?
Absolutely.
Can't do that.
He doesn't want to share that.
That's probably
no chance.
No, I know. So that's probably the goal, right? Is to somehow survive.
I can imagine a world in which Scherzer doesn't even want to do the All-Star. Thank you. He's like, I had that thought.
Maybe he doesn't want to. Right? He wants to earn it. Right? Verlander's like,
earn
whatever.
The All-Star. So dude, sure, this sounds like a nice time. The last thing I'll say about Verlander, and I wish I had been there for this press conference for the following image that I could have written like, you know, 1,000 words on. Tarek Skubal, the current best pitcher on the planet, sitting in the press conference room, watching Verlander give this goodbye. A pitcher that was impenetrable, was as good as anyone has ever been, as physically imposing as anybody has ever been on a mound. At the end of the story, Tarek Skubal at the peak of his powers, sitting there in the room, looking at the future version of himself. Like that to me, I would love to give Skubal some truth serum to know what was going through his head at that time.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Especially you consider, right, the parallels of what Skubal has accomplished and how small his accomplishments seem compared to what Verlander did in terms of a longevity and durability. Like, obviously, back-to-back Cy Youngs is not something that Verlander ever did. So he has that ahead of him. But at the same time, to have what in my head is really three peaks. You know, the first one with Detroit, the second one with Houston, having surgery, coming back and doing it again is just probably inspiring to Scooble now that he's coming back from his own elbow issue and maybe isn't going to get back to his peak form this season, but can think about that again beyond it. It's a little bit of a different situation because he was only out for so long. But yeah, no, it's a great point. It's a great point. And I'm sure that he will embrace the opportunity to share a clubhouse with him for the remainder of the season, even if I do not expect Justin Verlander to pitch very much for the rest of the year. All right, let's take a break. When we return, oh, but by the way, before we take a break, let's just remind everybody, Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel is here. That's where you can find all things Baseball Barbacast. We're going to be doing all kinds of stuff on there. We're going to be experimenting with some shorts. So you'll see a bunch of content from us that's not just from the podcast over on that channel. So some make pants. Sure you subscribe to the Yahoo Sports. Yeah, some shorts and some pants, maybe some capris if we're really feeling frisky.
Some YouTube pants.
We'll see what we can cook up there, but make sure you subscribe to Yahoo Sports MLB on YouTube. All right, let's take a break. When we return, we'll go around the league.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the All-Star game. Let's do some draft chat, baby, this morning. I need some draft chat, baby, tonight. The MLB draft is less than a day away, probably by the time you're listening to this. It is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, which is a great way to say MLB cares about it. But whatever, that's neither here nor there. One person that definitely cares about it is the man sitting virtually across from me, and that is Jordan Schusterman, Yahoo Sports' resident draft loser. And I say that with nothing but love. Jordan cranked out legitimately thousands of words on 50 draft prospects this week. It is a supreme accomplishment. You should go read it. I did yesterday. You will learn quite a bit. There are many different avenues we can go down, but we will, as the draft does too, we will start at the top. With the Chicago White Sox, the ascendant Chicago White Sox, who have the number one overall pick. Jordan, we got some like actual definitive information about where the White Sox are going to go with their pick, which is a very unique thing.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, right? Because it was news that we all knew, but it was very rare to hear the actual team, in this case, their amateur scouting director, longtime scouting director, Mike Shirley, who spoke to the media earlier this week and was like, yeah, the three guys that you guys all think we're debating, yes, those are the guys. And giving quotes about Rock Chalowski, the UCLA shortstop, Grady Emerson, the Texas high school shortstop, and Vaughn Lackey, the Georgia Tech catcher. He was like, yeah, we're talking about all these guys. Like these, you know, Vaughn had this amazing season and looks like a franchise catcher, and Grady is an elite high school player, and Rock really, you know, held serve as you know, the best player in the country who we've all been talking about for over a year now. And it was interesting to just acknowledge that. And then also to now, I appreciated it because it was like, all right, yeah, we're not pretending like we're still considering 10 players. But it also speaks to the fact that, and I felt this as I was doing my rankings, and if you talk to anybody, this is the real fun of this year's draft. And it's not that unique. I mean, even last year with Eli Willits and Cade Anderson and Ethan Holliday, we did get to the top pick and we weren't totally sure who was going to get picked. But this year, with what this debate has become with these three players and where the White Sox are as a team, as a franchise, as a farm system, all of these things, it's all, I love it. I mean, it was very frustrating and like agonizing to figure out how I was going to put them in on my ranking. But at the end of the day, I love that we're sitting here today and could make a real argument for any of these guys at the top, both from our perspective and for what we think is actually going to happen.
Right. So I think that if you're going to do the likelihood of who gets picked, we're at 33, 33, 33, 1. one being anybody else.
Yeah.
We could even be smaller. Would you agree with that? Or would you handicap it a different way?
It seems like Lackey's at least a little bit behind. But okay. I don't know. I don't know what that's, you know, I'm reading all the same mock drafts that everybody else is. So that's not a super informed take. I don't know. It seems like it's been more of a Chulowski versus Emerson conversation. Now, we talk about how teams should not be drafting for need, but also, like, I shuffled the order of this top three so often over these last, you know, few days before we published. And, like, Lackey is my favorite. I know it's like, oh, well, hey, you know, dumbass, why didn't you just put him one? Yeah, maybe I should have, right? Like, he's the one I am just so enthused by and fascinated by. But I don't know. I don't know. So I feel like he's less likely, but we'll see.
Here is a question for you. Do you think the White Sox have decided? Do you think that the White Sox right now at 9:47 a.m. on Friday, July the 10th, almost 24 hours before they have to pick, do you think they've made a decision right now? I think no. I think if I learned anything from their scouting director telling us that they're going between three guys, it's that they're actually still debating between three guys. And I think that that's interesting. Do you have a sense for how rare that is? Like, at what point during the draft process, a team picking first overall is like, this is what we're doing.
So this is where you have to, of course, introduce the unique mechanics of the draft involving the bonus pools. And if the team is looking big picture and thinking, okay, well, we're picking again at 41, Von Lackey is going to have a smaller signing bonus than Chulowski or Emerson, and we want to pay someone even better at 41, let's do that. I don't think that line of thinking is as relevant here. And that's not just because, you know, Shirley said we're picking the best player. I just feel like I don't think that the White Sox are going to view it that way. I would hope, as we are almost 24 hours away, that they've maybe narrowed it down to two between the three. Because if you're still at this level of weighing the three, I don't really believe that they're still viewing all three of them equally. And it maybe they're going down to two. And it feels stupid to say, okay, well, whoever one we can get cheaper, we'll just pick that if we view them equally. Because there's just no way they actually view them equally, even though there are situations where that is the tiebreaker. Okay, we can spread out this money a little bit later. So to your point, how rare is it? Maybe not as rare as you think, but the three where you really could split it up that evenly, I think that does feel a little rare. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe two is not that uncommon, but three like this, yeah, I do think so.
But what is interesting about the mechanics of this draft is that often if a team goes down one path or another, it will, you know, unleash a set of dominoes that will impact the rest of the draft. That's not really the case this year. Because this top three is so cut and dry above everyone else, Chulowski, Lackey, Emerson are going to probably go in the top three picks to Chicago, Tampa Bay, Minnesota. And so you can almost start the rest of the conversation at number four, where the San Francisco Giants sit, crossing their fingers and praying to the God above that maybe one of those three falls. If they don't, who would you go with at four if you were them?
Yeah, I mean, I love Jackson Flora, the right-handed pitcher from UC Santa Barbara. He was the top pitcher in the class. I think most people agree he's the top pitcher in the class. So me having him for my rankings was not particularly unique. But yeah, I just think this guy, it's what it looks like. And then you talk to him and you're like, yep, I want this guy in my organization. He has the right mindset, the right attitude, how much better he's gotten since he got there. You know, not necessarily someone that came out of high school and everyone thought he was going to be the next big thing. He's just worked and made it happen and made the most of his physical gifts. And I think he's just going to keep getting better. And if you're the Giants, again, you know, how much should you care about sentiment? You want to pick the best player. This dude grew up in the East Bay, a Giants fan. Like, I don't know. You want to draft someone. The Giants haven't had a lot to feel good.
Sacramento.
Oh, he
Sacramento
didn't.
A's fan?
Maybe, not that I know of. He grew up in Pleasanton, Foothill High School. But again, this is a lazy way to think about it. And people who, but it's like the Giants haven't had a lot of things to feel good about this season. And drafting the kid who I think is easily the best pitcher in the draft, a farm system that is starved for starting pitching like this, and a kid who's local, yeah. Like I don't know. It looks pretty obvious to me, but we'll see how Buster Posey feels about that.
If you want to read about specific players, you can do that on Jordan's 250. Before we move on from draft stuff, I want to ask
50,
you about
not 250. If I did 250, that would have been 100,000 words. But you know, thankfully,
America 250. Jordan 50.
Yes.
There is a difference. Although if you read Jordan's list, you will feel freedom. Jordan, instead of looking at it from a player perspective, let's talk about teams. Because you do mention some team stuff in there, but you do mostly focus on the players. Who are some teams for whom this is a crucial draft?
Yeah, so we'll go back to San Francisco there. The fact that they had this lottery luck to even jump up into the top five, even if they don't end up with one of those top three, that's just a huge amount of money to your bonus pool. And then trading for a pick as well from Cleveland in the Patrick Bailey trade, they have a really big bonus pool and their farm system is much improved, but this is another opportunity to see what Mr. Posey is all about, right? I mean, it's every data point with him. We're going to learn it again at the trade deadline, right? Like what does he care about? So the Giants is really interesting. And then there's a couple other teams who just have not had big bonus pools in recent years because they've either been really good or they were banging on trash cans. That's the Houston Astros, who, of course, had plenty of picks taken away from them and also
were winning a lot. Yeah. They were the only team that was banging on the trash cans, or were there other teams that were doing that, or just them?
Who's to say? I think from my understanding,
other teams were doing stuff, but they were not doing it as funnily.
Right,
the Astros.
Right.
It was not as whimsical of a strategy.
No. But yes, Houston is definitely a team. They have an additional pick because Hunter Brown. You know, this is part of the prospect PPI picks, where if you promote your younger players and you have young pre-R players that are getting Cy Young votes, you can get an additional pick. And so they have a pick at the back of the first round. They're also just picking earlier in the first round than they normally have. So they have a bunch of picks. The Pirates have a huge bonus pool. The Cardinals, let's pause on the Cardinals, and then we'll finish with the opposite, which is the Dodgers situation I definitely want to mention for a second. The St. Louis Cardinals have the most picks on day one. Day one this year will be the first four rounds. I believe last year it was the first three rounds, but Saturday will be four rounds. So it's like 135 picks, 140 picks or so. And the Cardinals, because they traded for multiple comp picks in the Brendan Donovan trade, have seven picks. They have their own comp pick, those two additional picks they traded for, and then those four picks. So they have seven picks on day one. And that is most exciting because our longtime pal, Zach Mortimer, is now their amateur scouting director. And I don't know if we've mentioned Mort on this show before. We probably have. But for those of you who have followed us for a long time that have read Baseball Perspectives 10 years ago, this is someone that means a lot to us. And to see him grind over the last decade from an area scout to a cross checker to now the scouting director is both hilarious because we still think of Mort as a goofy guy from South Jersey who doesn't know how to spell. But now he is a terrific scout who's played a big hand in the Cardinals drafts already over the last half decade and is now leading the charge with Chaim Bloom and Randy Flores in that Cardinals front office.
Yep.
So I'm so excited for Mort, seeing him at the combine, hanging out with him. Like I don't know if he's listening. He doesn't have time to listen to this right now, but I know he's a couple years older than us, but I couldn't be more proud of that guy and just so excited for him to be in this role. So it's awesome.
This gentleman that Jordan is talking about was the third ever guest we had on a podcast in the summer of 2013 before we got to college. And now he is running the draft for a professional baseball team. Time flies when we're having fun and he's working hard. Jordan, enough draft chat. We'll be there on site. I am excited. Yeah. It will be fun. Is there anything else you want to get off your chest before we do Derby chat?
Just the last thing is just the Dodgers, because they have signed all the free agents and because they're penalized because they're spending all the money. They have two picks on day one. It's like 40 and 130 something. And they have like the smallest bonus pool that any team has had in years. And of course, they will still draft probably some of the best players.
This happened last year. This literally happened last year. They had two picks. I was like 41 and 42 mm-hmm. or 40 and 41.
Yep.
And they took, I believe, two guys from Arkansas.
Yep. Yep.
Zach Root and Charles Davalon, both of whom have just been better than where they were picked already. Awesome. They've both been amazing, and like they'll get traded to teams for Tarek Skubal or something. Okay. No more draft.
Derby time.
Quick derby update before we take a break. When we last spoke, I believe we only had two participants, Junior Caminero and Ben Rice. In the days since, we were given Jack Caglione and then Wilson Contreras and then Jordan Walker. And yesterday, finally, Bryce Harper threw his hat in the ring. That gives us six spots. Kyle Schwarber heavily assumed to also be involved. We had Don Mattingly, Phillies manager, after the game last night being like, yeah, it'll be cool to see Bryce and Kyle in there. And they were like, Kyle? And he was like, yeah, if he feels good. I would be surprised if Schwarber doesn't do it. And that means one more spot. Who would you add? If you could pick any two people that have yet to say no, like John Becker, Derby Track King, there are like players that have said, I'm not doing this. Taking those dudes out of the mix, who would you want to see in it?
I don't know if this guy is on the list there. Has Sal Stewart said anything about...
No, he has said nothing. Derby? He's been suspiciously silent.
Okay. Now, we have to acknowledge that Jack Caglione was pulled in from outside the All-Star Game roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is... Which, by the way, great pick. Like, I'm excited to watch Cags.
Correct
like,
pick.
That's cool.
There should be they did this last year with O'Neill Cruz and it was a hit.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's true. So it's good that they've established the precedent there. So, but in terms of like personality, and I think Sal Stewart would be awesome in terms of the actual All-Stars. I mean, I think Hunter Goodman deserves it, but you've made it clear, and I understand that, you know, that's maybe not what MLB wants to be one of the eight precious derby spots.
Rockies because catcher, he's not a huge name. Hunter Goodman has been very public about wanting to do the derby. He has a ton of home runs. I believe he is second in baseball in home runs hit. He has since been passed by Yordan, Ben Rice, and Junior Caminero, but he has 27 homers. I get that you want to see this guy in the game. It's an exhibition, and I understand why the league is not immediately going to Hunter Goodman. They'll try and fill those spots. The two guys I want to see, if Schwarber does do it, it would be Schwarber and Munetaka Murakami, who is now off the IL starting today for the Chicago White Sox. You'd be pulling him out from not All-Star land, and he's coming off the IL, so that's a little iffy. And then it's just Juan Soto. Like, I think Juan Soto
for sure
is the right guy for this.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be shocked if he opts in kind of last minute. It sounds like he was at least considering it, and we know he's the only Met that's going to be there. So
he's also been incredible.
We'll see. Yeah, well, that ain't news. But he's won the event before. To me, that's more relevant. Is anybody going for a second Derby title? I think is significant.
Him and
in
Harper.
That respect, I imagine they will just at least ask Juan Soto 25 more times before they throw their hands up and say, "Okay, Hunter Goodman, you can be in the Derby."
Yes, that is exactly the correct way to put it. They will do their due diligence. Any additional replacements? Ranger Suarez, who was on the All-Star team, he's going to go on the IL, or I believe he's already on the IL. That's probably going to be Sonny Gray, if I had to guess. Not sure what the holdup there is. Pitchers that throw on Saturday ahead of the All-Star game, it's usually like 50-50 whether they end up pitching in the game. Last year, there were, I think, six pitchers that threw on Saturday that pulled out and didn't appear in the All-Star game. And so we're now at a point where that's Joe Ryan, Cam Schlittler, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Christopher Sanchez. We'll probably get those replacements by the next time we talk on Sunday night. There is a lot that will happen between now and then.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, like anecdotally, I feel like we've had way more replacements in years past than we've had this year, at least so far. So that means that my all snub team is holding up pretty good because there's all kinds of guys that
they're
are not going to end up there. And they were indeed snubbed. All right, let's take a break. When we return, it is Friday. So we are going to give you the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's hop into it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I will get us started this week. My good is a life well lived. Phil Reagan, baseball lifer, coach for decades, passed away this week at the age of 89 years old in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Phil Reagan, for those of you who recognize the name, that is because he was the super old guy that was the pitching coach for the Mets back in 2019. But Phil Reagan's baseball life, what a thing. I was fortunate enough to get to meet and talk to Phil when he was managing in the Dominican Republic in 2019 at the age of 82, which is just remarkable in and of itself. This guy's baseball career, older than the draft, Jordan. He told me, he was like, people would always ask me, like, hey, what round were you drafted in? He was like, I wasn't. I signed before the draft. He goes on to pitch for the Dodgers in the mid-60s with their dominant rotation. Sandy Koufax nicknames him the Vulture because he was a reliever that would steal wins from the starting pitchers. He got MVP votes in 1966, made the All-Star team that year. Around long enough, like his rookie season was 1960, faced Ted Williams that year in Ted Williams' final season. Just the idea that I sat down and had a conversation with someone that pitched against Ted Williams, just like, it just like scrambles your brain in a way that is really difficult. And then the coaching career is incredible. So he retires in 1973, 9 years as the head coach at Grand Valley State University in Michigan. And the story of how he kind of got from there into big league pitching coaching is just preposterous. The Mariners hire him as an advanced scout because he worked with a player that they were looking at. And I'm just going to read the story that he told me about how he became the Mariners pitching coach that season, because it is one of the funniest. It's like one of my favorite stories, and I had forgotten about it. So if you don't mind, Jordan, I'm just going to read it to you.
Please, go for it.
I get a call from someone in the Mariners office telling me to go to Seattle. I'd never been, my first trip there. A few things you need to know. We had a catcher named Bob Kearney, a hard-nosed kind of guy, and Frank Funk was our pitching coach. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Oakland Coliseum, but Seattle at the time had the same kind of dugouts, where if you're sitting on the bench, the John, the bathroom, is right there on the same level to the floor. So anyway, Frank, the pitching coach, is out there sitting on the bench. He's got a pitcher. He needs to throw a bullpen. The catcher comes down, and he's mad because he's not in the lineup that night. Pitching coach asks the catcher to catch a bullpen for him. The catcher snaps back, I'm not catching any bullpen, turns around and huffs back into the clubhouse. Well, the catcher's glove was sitting on top of the bench. The pitcher coach got mad and threw the glove down on to the floor. It took a hop, bounced up, and went right in the toilet. It's soaking wet. Pitcher coach picks it up, puts it back on the bench, and goes down to the bullpen. Catcher comes back out, ready to catch the pen, finally, but then sees his glove and asks what happened. Someone tells him the pitching coach threw it in the toilet. He got up, went down to the bullpen, and punched the pitching coach in the face. So I became the pitching coach. I followed up. Your first job as a pitching coach happened because the other pitching coach threw a catcher's glove in the toilet and got punched in the face. Yes, they fired him over it. Not the catcher. He stayed. The pitching coach got fired because he threw the glove in the toilet. I was there. That's how I got hired. He then went on to be a big league pitching coach for 30 years because the catcher had his glove thrown in the toilet and punched the pitching coach in the face. I will tweet this out. I believe I tweeted out already. My interview with him is on Baseball Prospectus when I was writing with them. One of the most unique characters that I've ever had the pleasure to chat with. And it is in my good because, you know, the end comes for all of us, and may we all go at age 89 with a life, a baseball career well had, a life well lived. So huzzah, rest in peace to Phil Reagan, and thoughts to his family.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned you you met him down there during winter ball. I was almost going to do this for my good, or it almost maybe want to do this, although I have another one that I'll do here in a second. But my Lyft driver from the airport today, he enjoyed that I was wearing my Aguilas hat because, of course, he was Dominican. Mm. And I bet that guy knows about Phil Reagan. I didn't think to ask about him this morning, but among the Americans that have gone down there and made a name for themselves, he is one of them. He became a familiar face in that league, yeah, in a pretty amazing way.
Let me just read you one more quick mini paragraph. This is the story about how he got traded from Detroit to LA during his career. This is just like the only a certain era. A scout for the Dodgers named Rudy Roofer saw me and thought I had a good slider. They used to have a 30-day interleague trading period, and you could only trade during that time between the AL and the NL. This man was, you know, of a different age, a different era.
That's awesome. All right. My good this week.
Rudy Roofer.
The release.
Go ahead.
Is the, you know what Rudy Roofer sounds like? Sounds like a character in Backyard Baseball is what that sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
Which is my good this week, which is the release of the rejuvenated, relaunched, rebooted Backyard Baseball game, courtesy of Mega Cat Studios, Playground Productions. I am truly in awe. It has been about 2 years since this franchise was being announced as being restored, a game and world that means a lot to people our age who played this game. And I'm sure there are some people of certain ages that are tired of us talking about this, but I have to just mention it because playing it a little bit over the last 24 hours since it got released yesterday, the care with which, on top of the fact that the game looks great, it's fun, they've made it a very fun experience, and it's just awesome. The care with which the people that did this took this IP, right? These characters and this world is honestly shocking in the best way possible. In a time where things usually just degrade and get worse, especially when they try to get rebooted and we claw for nostalgia and it just never quite feels the same, they crush this in a way that is so incredible. And I'm so impressed, and I'm so grateful that this is now a world that can be introduced to a whole new generation and feel like it is an authentic representation of what we experienced when we were kids. And even better, because now it's in 3D in a beautiful way. The game plays great. It still feels like the same game where it's point and click and you have the same personalities. And I don't know if you saw, though, the did you see our pal is featured in the game? I mean, this is like blows my mind. It's just the coolest thing ever. Kofi, the great Kofi, one of our favorite YouTubers, is the voice of Dante Robinson in the new Backyard Baseball game, which is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I know they reached out to have a lot of people do the voice acting. I know Kofi's been trying to get into this, and obviously he's roughly our age and cares about this game a lot, unsurprisingly. And so happy that Kofi got to be involved in this, and it's amazing. So I can't recommend it enough. It's on Mac now too. Yeah. I know when they relaunched, when they like recreated the older games last year, people were frustrated because they couldn't play on Mac, but you play it on Mac, play it on PC. I don't know what the console plan is, but it's just amazing. And I'm so happy that they've done this, and I'm just congratulations to the people that put this together, because I'm so impressed and so happy about it. So yeah, pretty good.
I would have done the Tony Delvecchio voice acting for free. hey, I'm hitting you. Something that doesn't make me feel nostalgic is my bad this week. Oh, and that is Bryce Harper filming a FanDuel video. This is a dark story, and I am not going to get into the weeds of it too much. The upshot is that Bryce Harper, there was a report that came out yesterday. Bryce Harper recorded a video as part of his cameo that was sent to an individual named Terry Thompson, basically saying, thank you for your FanDuel loyalty, I think is maybe the way to phrase it. Terry Thompson is someone who wagered over 18 million American dollars on FanDuel, earning VIP status. I believe that Terry Thompson kind of, there was a lawsuit that is happening now, where Thompson took out the second and third mortgages on his house to gamble gambling lo- to cover the gambling losses, fell into foreclosure, depression. These are the things that happen when sports gambling takes a hold. I think that the Bryce Harper side of this is going to get most of the headlines because the video is very dystopic and weird, as some Bryce Harper things are. But the story here is just that sports gambling has this really dreary, exploitative element to it. And we've talked about it on the show. I think this is different than the Emmanuel Clase game fixing, purposefully throwing balls story, but it is a different side of the same coin where we're just seeing laid bare the dangers and the horrors of what this thing can do. Now, should it be banned altogether? Should there be restrictions on advertising? That is a conversation for another day. But this is a big story, I think, and one that is undeniably bad.
Yeah, and I think that, right, as gambling has become just much more part of everything all the time, there's the fear of, okay, well, then you're giving a higher likelihood that a you have a Clase situation pops up. So that's one thing, true. But it is this situation is also something I've thought about because, yes, while the ads are everywhere all the time, right? I have thought about, like, when are you going to see players as direct spokespeople for that? And I feel like I have not seen that as much in terms of active players early in baseball. You know, you see former players and athletes, you know, promoting the all these sites all the time. But yeah, that's what made this one. And that's even without including all of the tragic circumstances of this individual, right? I'm just talking about any sort of direct acknowledgement from a active player about these things. That's concerning in and of itself. When you add in all the other stuff, I mean, yeah, it's just icky.
Should be clear. Philadelphia Inquirer did not find evidence that Harper has an official partnership with FanDuel or evidence that he was aware of Thompson's gambling addiction. So it seems as if someone paid Harper via Cameo to just record this video. And that is just evidence to me that there is someone or there is an institutional issue at some of these gambling sites where they're trying to latch onto these people's addictions and keep them hooked on what is a very addicting thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it. I gamble on sports once a year. I take the Joey Chestnut under during the hot dog contest because I think it's funny. That's it.
I went to trivia last night when my flight got canceled, and one of the bonus questions was involving the hot dog eating contest. And one of the bonuses was, what is the record? And I was like, I am ashamed to admit that I was 100% correct that the record is 76 hot dogs and buns.
76.
In 10 minutes. All right. My bad this week is a little bit more straightforward. Logan Webb is replying to people online. This is disappointing because Logan Webb, we like Logan Webb. He's a great pitcher. We like talking to Logan Webb. He's a cool guy. He usually has a good sense of humor and also usually has some good tweets, honestly. And actually, I believe he followed us, at least until yesterday, where he deactivated his account after responding to a bunch of people on Twitter who were, I guess, just obviously people are tweeting all the time about being frustrated with players' performances. And in this specific case, Logan decided to respond to a reporter named Jack Loader, and who had just recorded a very normal video that anyone who is watching a baseball team and even has press coverage will do, which is saying, wow, this team stinks. Okay, here's my thoughts. Like, that's a thing that plenty of beat writers are doing all the time.
Yeah.
But Logan decided to respond to this video saying, what's sad is they allow people like you in the locker room. So it's just like not productive. And obviously that just spiraled and he just started replying to more and more and more people. And everyone's like, dude, what are you doing?
So that's offline.
And it's just, it sucks because Logan's smarter than this. And it's just disappointing that what do you expect to happen here? I just don't, it's such a lose-lose. And yes, we like to think that there is a version where players can be online and have positive interactions with fans, but I'm sorry. This is just such an obvious lose-lose, and it's disappointing that he would fall into this for any reason.
Yeah, I mean, if people are coming at you and saying horrible things and you feel the need to defend yourself, I understand that. The way that this started was what I thought to be a little bit sensationalist, perhaps. And the tone of the original video from Jack Loader maybe wasn't the most professional in the world, but I don't think it was worthy of Logan Webb hopping in and critiquing the person's credentials. Like, it is also a sign that the season for the Giants has gone sideways, that mm-hmm. Logan Webb mm-hmm. probably feels responsible. But here, just like, I'll tell you a story. I don't know if I told you this. The other, was this the other day? No, this is like within the last month. I was talking to a player, a hitter, who had had a hit of theirs change to an error and was typing out a tweet to like complain about it online while I was talking to them. I was like, don't do that. They were like, why? I was like, I literally was like, don't tweet that. Like, there's nothing for you to gain. You're just going to look salty. I was like, tweet it out, save it in the drafts and move on. And it's unfortunate because we want these people to be interesting and compelling and cool characters or whatever. But usually the best move is just to put your phone in your pocket. Except if you're watching
100%.
Baseball Barbacast on MLB, the new MLB Yahoo YouTube channel. In which case you should, you know, pull your phone out of your pocket.
Well, at least
tell all your friends.
Or, you know, play the video, put it back in your pocket, just subscribe, like, all those things. But hey, also like Logan Webb, all-star. We'll see him here in a couple days. I'm looking forward to catching up with him. But, you know, these kinds of backs and forth that just end up with them deactivating is every time this happens, which is like it's four times a year, it seems like. It's just like, this is stupid. So, yep, throw it in my bad. But let's go to Ugla and finish up.
Be more like Jazz Chisholm, I guess, who at least, you know, doesn't deactivate after he says ridiculous things. Jordan, can you go Ugla first?
Sure, I will do that. Seiya Suzuki was, I believe, pulled from a game due to cramps. And after the game, he was asked, hey, dude, you doing all right? And he was like, yeah, no, it's pretty hot out there. I was getting cramped. This is not great. And then he said, through his interpreter, the great Edwin Stanberry, one of the best interpreters in the league, just said straight up, I am going to eat 100 bananas now. I'm going to go eat about 100 bananas. Now, I think there were two groups of people that probably saw this video. There were the group of people that said, that's a weird thing to say, and it's very funny that he's going to go eat 100 bananas. And then there's the group of people that, at least what I am assuming, knows exactly what Seiya Suzuki is referencing, which is one of the great interviews in the history of baseball media, which I recall, which looking into it, I believe was recorded by gentleman, an interview named Barry Davis, who used to work for Sportsnet in Toronto. And this was an interview from 2014 with the great Japanese utility man Munenori Kawasaki, where Kawasaki told, he was asked, he also was left the game early because of cramping. And they said, all right, what are you going to do about that? And he said, you know, bananas. I'm going to eat bananas. Because, of course, monkey never cramp. One of the great baseball quotes is monkey never cramp. I will point out that Kawasaki, after did that interview, did miss like a week of games after that. So I don't know if the bananas worked for him. I bring this up in Ugla because I loved just getting to remember that this interview happened. And I wonder if this is a real thing, that bananas can help you not cramp.
Oh, they
do. What is the right number? Okay, but what is the right number? Because I don't think it's 100.
When I'm riding my bicycle, I'm eating bananas.
Okay, so how many? What's like the most that you could eat before it's like, now I'm
It's under 100. It's under 100, okay. For sure.
Because Kawasaki 100 said, bananas I think, 3 or 4 in that interview. But what could you get up to?
Yeah, I could do a bunch. I would say a bunch. One bunch of bananas. They come in a bunch. So you just eat a bunch.
That's true. Okay. Yeah. But I love this. So just, I mean, the whole Kawasaki.
Jakey never cramps either.
Like one of the funniest things we've had in baseball in the 21st century. All right, back to you for Ugla. Finish strong here.
Matt Selinger debuted earlier this week. We talked about it on the show. Selinger, 31 years old, from Long Island, came up with the Mets and got absolutely swirlied. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Matt Selinger as the gateway to the end of an era. Jordan, do you have any guess what I'm talking about?
Is it, I assume it's D3 related, but maybe not.
No. Matt Selinger is almost certainly, very likely going to be the last Major League Baseball player older than me to make their MLB debut. Matt Selinger was born on April 19th, 1995. That is what we call the Bellinger zone, the zone between Jordan's birthday and my birthday, Jordan, in March, me in September. Matt Selinger, than me, younger than Jordan, made his big league debut. And I think it is very unlikely that anybody else older than me debuts in the big leagues. It's certainly possible. There's always like a Drew Maggi situation. So, Jordan, I did a little research to figure out who is the last player older than you to debut. Do you know who
you got? I mean, I'm sure I could figure it out, but please let me know.
So there were there have been four 1995 birthdays to debut this season. All of them are younger than you.
Okay.
Last year, there was one 1994 birthday to debut in the big leagues. And that person is Ryan Fitzgerald of the then Minnesota Twins and now Los Angeles Dodgers. So Ryan Fitzgerald, Jordan, is your guy. As of now, he is the final baseball player older than you to make their major league debut.
So I'm going to go and be a little pedantic for you, but also push back because I do think that this is something to consider. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Tomoyuki Sugano also debuted last year. Now, this is definitely a caveat, but I do think that this would be the path for you to have another older debut as a Japanese player. But I agree, it's against the spirit of what you're saying. I'm totally with you.
Yeah, and there are, you know, there are like Huascar Brazoban types that, you know, matriculate through the minors and it takes them a while. I'm not saying it's impossible. I am saying that there is a decent chance that Matt Selinger is my last guy. I hope it's not.
Totally possible.
I like feeling young. I shaved today just for that reason. If you're listening to this, let us know. If you're our age or a little older, who is the last baseball player older than you to make their major league debut?
God, that's awesome. That's a great one. Yeah, I thought you were going to do D3 because he was, yeah.
Well, Jordan, this is also the end to a good bookend, which is the first player younger than you to make their major league debut.
Oh, which was...
I know who it is.
Boy, I feel like I definitely did at some point.
First player younger than you to make their MLB debut was Adalberto Mondesi in the 2015 World Series. So your bookends, Jordan, if this is it, are Adalberto Mondesi and Ryan Fitzgerald, and your life is nestled right in between those two bookends. For me, it is Julio Urias and Matt Selinger. So let us know who are your bookends. Email us baseballbarbacast@gmail.com.
An incredible finish to this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast. The draft begins on Saturday, rounds 1 through 4. Rounds 5 through 20 will be on Sunday, which means only 2 days. We used to say day 3, D3 for the D3 guys like Matt Selinger, who was a 28th round pick in 2017. No day 3 this year.
Now we see Monday, day 3.
Yeah.
Get a real job.
We've got the futures game on Sunday, the Derby on Monday, the All-Star game on Tuesday. If you want to go to these games, use the Game Time app. I'm sure you can find certainly some tickets to the futures game and definitely the Derby. We always say if you're going to go to if you're deciding to
Derby,
spending some money on the Derby or the All-Star game, we obviously recommend the Derby. So check out Game Time for tickets there.
Before we get out of here, MLB, what is the frickin' point of even doing the futures game if we're going to do it at noon on a Sunday, 15 minutes before Jacob Mizorowski faces off against Paul Skeens? If I am on my couch and I have to choose between the Futures game and Mizorowski and Skeens, even us, even Jake and Jordan, the baseball sickos of the world, are picking Skeens Mizorowski. I know the league didn't know this was going to happen. What is the point of the Futures game if we're just going to bury it in the schedule? That is all I have to say.
Just looking at the Sunday slate, I am seeing Wheeler Skubal also on Sunday. So that is pretty juicy. All right, everybody, you can read and follow our draft coverage tomorrow. Of course, go check out my top 50.
Subscribe
into that and quite
subscribe
to the
or I will
Yahoo Sports
is a threat
MLB
I
channel.
Will break into your home and I will put all the spoons where the forks are and all the forks where the spoons are, and then I'll leave and you'll come down in the morning to have cereal and you'll be a mess. You don't want that. You don't want that. So subscribe.
Please subscribe. Support that channel. And you can email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. Thank you to Andrew Hartz. Thank you to Ingrid Rosas for producing this Friday edition. And we will talk to you all on Sunday night from Citizens Bank Park. See ya.